Hello again. I am once again sitting in the woods. And the sun is almost setting. And everything is kind of glowing. And part of what that means is I can't make this recording too long because I will need to find my way out of the woods again. And if it's too dark, that's going to be a little bit more difficult. I just finished a big turning point in my current work in progress, my fifth book in the series, and I'm in quite a state over it, because even though there are still so many things wrong that need to be sorted out, not necessarily in the writing of it. I mean, like, from the character's perspective, what they're attempting to accomplish. But one decision has been made. It was made today while I was writing, and it means that a handful of characters are about to have the moment that they have been working for many years, and it has kind of been their sole focus in a way. You know, they're about to get, I think most of them are about to get a little break. Yawit is not going to get a little break in the way the rest of them are. And I know this because I have mentioned that my current mistress project is a book quite far ahead in the series. And in that book, he is not the same man that he is in the current book. And I know that there's going to be something waiting for him when he gets to where he's going that is gonna break him a little bit. But a lot of the other characters are getting a much deserved, I guess, reward for everything they have done and been through. And I'm very, very, very excited to get there and to write that scene. Quite often in the earlier books, I have written a character fantasizing about being able to give these men this thing and imagining what that moment is going to be like. And of course it's not going to be exactly how Almira pictured it, but I'm really excited. But I'm also quite scared, because sometimes while writing you get a little nasty surprise when you think you are going to get something wonderful. But that maybe explains why I'm in such a good mood. You know, you write about characters long enough, you genuinely do care about them. And you know, you root for them. And it feels really good when a group of very good people get something nice. I guess I also wanted to talk about another one of those perhaps less actionable topics. But having spent a little bit of time hanging out in the online writers community, particularly on Instagram, and looking at the brilliant memes, the never-ending memes, and especially now when everybody is trapped at home, the meme game is strong. But there's a consistent theme, I think, that comes up, and that is energy. And I don't mean in completely a literal sense, as in physical energy, you know, you go to sleep and then you wake up rested, or necessarily even emotional or mental energy. Nor do I mean it in the full-blown hippie new age sense of the word, although I think it's important to pay attention to all of these different types of energy. I mean the energy that one uses while they're writing, and the energy that can get depleted quite quickly if you're not careful. And I think it's something that maybe a lot of us aren't focused on charging. You know, if we think of it like, I don't know, like a cell phone battery or something like that. And I imagine that for a lot of us, the way we charge this energy is going to be different. But there's two kinds of ways I want to look at this. First, I'll talk a little bit about the things that I do that I think give me the energy to write as much as I do and as often as I do. Sometimes I, honestly, quite frequently, I manage 10,000 words in a day. But I also wanted to talk about kind of the ideal situation, which isn't always easy to maintain, but I think it's something that we're all kind of working towards without maybe knowing it, and that is creating and cultivating the writing environment and scenario in such a way that writing is what gives us the energy that we need to keep writing. You know, that is the goal, to have sat down and written and feel more energized afterwards than you did before. And I think I, in particular, wanted to talk about this today because that's how I feel right now. I feel completely elated and like I don't want to do anything else. I just want to get to that point that I mentioned earlier in the story, and I want to see these men experience it. And I really hope that that's actually what's going to happen. You know, we'll see. We will see. But I think I'm going to find out in the next day or two, or maybe three. There's usually a little last minute hiccup, of course. As many of you have already been able to figure out, one of the ways I recharge is spending time in nature. That's an easy one. Maybe slightly less easy right now, given everything that's going on in the world, but that will come back again, I think. And maybe in particular with the stories that I'm working on right now, that works because I feel quite away from the modern world. But also, I think it has something to do with isolation and quiet, which a lot of us are experiencing right now. And maybe because it's not chosen by us, it's dependent on some extreme circumstances, it can be a little frustrating right now. You know what I mean? You were going to clean your room and then your mom said, hey, go clean your room, and suddenly you don't want to do it anymore. It's that kind of thing a little bit right now. But a lot of writers that I admire, a lot of great writers from history, a lot of famous writers speak about isolation as a very important part of their writing process. And I know for me, certainly, that is the case. If I spend an entire day alone, it's very easy the next day to sit down and write. And I think a big part of that is that maybe we don't want to admit how much other things influence us. You know, the people in our lives, the music we listen to, the movies we watch, the television shows we watch, the internet arguments we read. And when you give yourself enough time away from these outside influences, your own voice and your own thought patterns become a lot more obvious and are, you know, easier to access. And maybe, particularly in this day and age, isolation helps when writing, because so much of our lives now is on display. You know, so much of what we do is recorded or photographed and shared with other people. And while this can be a very beautiful, connective sort of thing, it can also mean that there is a bit of performance going on. And I'm one of those people that thinks realism is incredibly important in writing. And of course, there are incredibly unrealistic books and movies and television shows and great works of art. But I would argue that they only appear unrealistic at first glance, and they're actually speaking about something that is true very deep below the surface. And it's so deep that we almost need this fantastical scenario in order to explore it. And also, isolation leaves you with your own thoughts, which can often allow you to better understand yourself and your motives and what's actually going on with you and who you are. And of course, this is important when writing characters and writing what they're going through. You know what I mean? Yeah, you can have an alcoholic character that is in denial about things, but I think the best writing involving that kind of character would also make it clear what they're in denial about. And spending time alone can reveal these hidden parts of ourselves. And, you know, then we can put them down on paper or word processor, as it were. And along that vein, I do think meditation is a great tool. I was meditating a lot before I wrote the first book in my series, which I wrote faster than any of the others. I wrote that in 10 days, I wrote 100,000 words. And I had been meditating every day for about 3 weeks before that, for at least 20 minutes, but sometimes up to 2 hours. And I think a lot of this goes along with that first episode that I made. I think that almost all of us are instinctively storytellers. I think that's an integral part of what it is to be a human. And when you make space around yourself and you let things get really quiet, it's easier for the stories to come out. And in particular, it's easier for those quieter stories within us, the ones that, you know, whisper instead of yelling, to find their way out. And of course, there's probably a whole bunch of other health stuff you could talk about, you know what I mean? Like foods that help you focus, you know, eat healthy, take good care of yourself. All the things that everyone says, that's a part of it too, I'm certain. Setting the environment before you write. I know some people who really like writing in a mess, and I know some people who really like writing when everything's clean. I'm one of those people that quite often I find if I just don't have the energy to keep going, I stop and, you know, put away the leftovers from my snacks and the empty teacups and, you know, maybe wipe the surface down. And suddenly I have the energy to write a little bit more. And just having things clean and in order makes it easy for the thoughts to come out. They feel like they have space, I guess. But you know, if you're one of those people that has done your best work, while in a mess, then, you know, let it get a little messy, I guess. And I think that's kind of a fun little exercise, because even if you haven't completed a novel, if you're someone who writes a lot, you have all these different snippets. And I think going back and looking at what are, in your opinion, your best pieces, and thinking about where you were and how you were feeling when you wrote them is a really useful thought experiment. Personally, I find the best writing I have ever done has been while I have been on a train, and more broadly when I'm in the midst of a transition. I find those in-between spaces the best for writing, and that's in part why, as much as I was adamantly against the smartphone, the smartphone movement, when I finally did end up with a smartphone and I had the notes section on my phone, that was a pretty big deal for me, because suddenly I could write in all of these transitory spaces. I could write on the subway, I could write while I was waiting in a line, I could write on the train, on the bus, on the plane. And again, I think the feeling when going to a new place is quite an open feeling there's a lot of space there because you don't know what you're going to find when you get there. And there's something about that that I find very creatively stirring. And I wanted to talk as well about one of the many practices in the Artist's Way. At some point, I'm going to do an entire episode on that book because I think it's brilliant. And not only do I think it's brilliant, but you can look up pretty much every artist, I guess, that is prolific, as in they create a lot of high quality work very quickly, that has been working post the Artist's Way. So many of them cite this book, and having read it and done the exercises in it, I can only say that I wholeheartedly agree with them. But I wanted to talk about one of the practices that she talks about in the book, which is the artist's date. And this is, I think, I don't remember the exact parameters, but I think it was something to be done for 1 hour every week, is to go on an artist's date, which is you alone. No friends, no partners, just you. Taking yourself on a date that gives you kind of this mental space and peace that we've been talking about. This can be going to a museum by yourself. And you know, obviously most of us, pretty much all of us, can't do that right this second, but you get the idea, you get the emotion. It can be taking a walk by yourself in the woods. It can be watching the sunrise. It can be gardening. And this was also something that I was doing in the month leading up to me writing the first book. And of course you're sensing a pattern here. You know, I think writers, but all artists, I'm sure, they recharge the creative, expressive part of themselves. They recharge their inner voice, I guess, by doing these kind of isolated, quiet activities. And, you know, really, there's never been a better time, considering that none of us at the moment can go out and socialize and do all the things that we normally do, to find a way to make this kind of space and to find a way to create the environment that we write best in. You know, a lot of writers will say they do their best work very early in the morning before the rest of the world has woken up, or very late at night while the rest of the world is sleeping. And I think that's because of what I've been talking about. And there are a lot of other little things that I think when you start paying attention to your writing environment, you will find really set you on the right track. They really put you in the right mindset. For me, that's a nice clean space. One of the weirder things that I have found is that I write better in natural lighting as opposed to artificial lighting. And I know that's like a strange, like hyper specific one, but for me that really changed things. You know, sitting near the window and having the lights off during the daytime, I write a lot better than sitting under, you know, a lamp or a ceiling light. Likewise, I know somebody that likes mood lighting when she writes. You know, candles, those, what are those pink? They look like gemstones, crystal lamps maybe, the Himalayan lamps. And she'll turn the lights down really low, so there's just enough light. And I don't know if that's so good on the eyes, but she swears by it. And I think when enough of these little tidbits come together, if you start paying attention to when you write and how you write, and in particular when your best writing has come about, you will find a pattern. You will find a few things that, I guess, become habits where you set this up the way that you like it, and your body takes the cues to leave you alone because you're writing. You know, your mind knows that it gets to focus on this fun creative activity and all the other things that are swimming around in your head are put away for the time that you spend writing. And if you do this long enough, I think you end up kind of where I was today. You end up becoming charged by the experience of writing, you know, and if this is something that I can master, because I don't always feel this way after I'm writing, in particular if a scene has been more on the heartbreaking side, I usually need a moment to kind of recover and deal with the guilt of having written what I just wrote. A lot of these memes seem to think that writers don't care when they kill a character or make a character suffer. But I feel really badly about it. Really badly. It stays with me, sometimes for weeks. That one dude, I'm sorry, man. I know, I keep thinking about this one guy. Oh, man. As a side note, because it's when talking about writing, it's quite hard to not talk about the project that you're working on in detail. But when the first book comes out later this year, I'm definitely going to do like a full disclosure, spoilers kind of talk where I can go through and discuss all the plot points in detail and where I think different things came from, etc., etc. But for now, just know there's one dude. There's one guy. I'm sorry, man. Now I'm all in my feelings again, thinking about it. But I think if you get enough of these little tweaks to your environment and your mental state down, not only does it become very easy to write, but you reach this lovely, reciprocal, kind of synergistic space, which you can write in and feel excited to keep writing. And if you stay in the space long enough, you might find yourself, I certainly have, getting annoyed by the things that pull you away from it. you know, somebody calls and you're like, I don't know, I'm in the middle of something. I'm having a whole cathartic experience right now. Can we talk later? You know, your partner's like, hey, are we gonna eat dinner? Are we gonna order something? What do you want to do? And you're like, I don't want to do dinner at all. I want to keep sitting here and following this thread. And it can be that kind of thing where you are accidentally waking up a little early or a lot early because you're excited to start writing again. The second you wake up, you're like, oh man, yes. Oh, and I just left it off right at this. Oh my God, I got it right now. Maybe I should brush my teeth. And then yes, straight to it. And you can find yourself staying up way past your bedtime. Similarly to reading a book. No, I gotta find out what happens next. I'm not ready to go to bed yet. I want to stay here in the space that I'm in. And yeah, there maybe are some social repercussions to this. I've certainly experienced them since I started writing as much as I have. And I've always written a lot, but since I've started writing this amount, that has changed my romantic relationship. And luckily, I'm with somebody who is very creative and very emotional, and he understood, but there was definitely a bit of an adjustment curve. And actually, this is completely actionable. If anybody else is struggling with that in particular, feeling like they're not being present with somebody that they would really like to be present with because of the work that they're so invested in, what we kind of discovered quite by accident was he created a little folder on his computer, and anything that he wanted to show me or talk to me about, or, you know, anything that he would have previously run in and been like, hey, this is what's up. But now he knows that I'm writing and I kind of want to stay in the vibe that I'm in. He puts them all into this little folder, and in the evening when I take a break from writing, sadly, he opens the folder and we can go through all these things that I used to be sharing with him the moment they came up, but now it's kind of become a very cute romantic thing that we do. So maybe that is a solution to one of these problems. And obviously if you have children, that's a very different thing. And I can't even begin to talk about that because I don't have children of my own. Though I really want them. I have always really, really wanted to have children. And it's quite funny actually to think about the age that I am now. And the fact that I don't have any children, despite adamantly my entire life this being the only thing that I really wanted. And it's so apparent to everybody that I forever have been the friend that the moment somebody's pregnant, they message me. Sometimes before they tell their partner, they're like, hey, yo, you're gonna be super jealous. And I'm like, oh my God, you're pregnant too? And they're like, yep. And actually, now that I'm saying that out loud, some of the things in my story make a little bit more sense. Oh gosh, that's a whole topic in and of itself, psychoanalyzing yourself while you edit your book. Soon I'm going to do an editing episode, because as dreadful as I thought editing would be, it hasn't been that way at all. But let's put editing to one side. Because that requires a very different mindset, I think, than the one that we're talking about right now, the mindset that helps you produce work, and not only produce work, but produce it in a way that you are not so drained you can't pick it up again for, you know, a week or sometimes a month, or, you know, some people take years. Now, if all of this sounds really foreign to you, there's two kind of things I would say to that. One is that it is very easy to romanticize the struggling writer, the person who sits all day and stares at the blank page and is tormented. And yes, that's kind of a poetic situation. And because of that, it is attractive to us because we are writers. And we like when life has poetry. But I do think that is an unhealthy thing to idolize. And the other thing that I would say about finding this whole conversation completely foreign and opposite to your own experience of writing, I think a very important a little paradigm shift is to consider the relationship between writing and having fun. You know, for me, writing is fun. So much so that it is probably the thing I most want to be doing. When I'm running errands, I am thinking, oh man, like, can't wait till this is done and I get to go home and write. It's something that I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy. And I think it's something that if you're drawn to doing it, you can also really enjoy. But if you find you're not, there is likely a problem there. Either a problem with the particular project you're working on. Perhaps it is what you think you should be writing, as opposed to what you would actually like to write and read about. Or it has to do with identity and defining yourself as a writer. I think a lot of us, and this was something that I have been working through for a while and I'm close to the light at the end of the tunnel, a lot of us associate success and hard work and feeling valuable with struggling. So much so that a lot of us think if we are not struggling, we are not working hard. If we're not stressed, we are not working hard. And especially nowadays, I think stress has become almost a status symbol, I guess. You know, if somebody's running around and looking really flustered, they must be really important. And I know many of us have had those jobs where it's the art of looking busy, where we've kind of put that on because there's literally nothing to do, but we still have to look like we're doing something. And to that, I would say you could take the most stressful job in the world. I don't know what that would be. But if the Dalai Lama was doing that job, he wouldn't be stressed. There's a way to do it, always, I think, without the stress. And that's a whole journey in and of itself to figure that out. And for most of us, this has to do with our upbringing and our settings, I guess, that are programmed into us when we're very young. This idea of what a good, productive person is. For most of us, this idea does not include somebody that is having a lot of fun while they're being productive. And I think when you sit and analyze that, you come to the conclusion that the two things really don't have anything to do with each other. You know, you can work really hard and get a lot done and have a good time while you're doing it. And likewise, you can be very stressed and busy and rushing around and actually have accomplished nothing at the end of the day or the hour or the week or the month or, heaven forbid, the year. And because these are just internal kind of paradigms, there are things that you can switch on and off, I think, if you give them enough attention and acknowledgement. And also, I think a big part of not enjoying writing is wearing your criticism hat while you're writing. And of course, there's that adage, don't edit while you write, which I firmly, firmly, firmly believe in. But it goes deeper than that. Particularly if you're writing with an audience in mind, or you're thinking about your dad reading the book. I told my dad he can't read most of the books. The one that I'm working on now, the fifth book, he is allowed to read. And I've actually already sent him a little excerpt because he was very curious. And he's someone who loves history as well. So I knew he was... But he respected it. I was like, Dad, I don't want you to know that I'm thinking about these kind of things. And he was like, okay, I get it. Or we're thinking about what our partners would think or our friends would think. And a lot of us are judging ourselves while we're writing. And that's not an easy thing. Like, I realize that all of the things that I'm saying, while very simple, you know, think about it this way instead of this way, it's very simple to say, it is much more difficult to do. And I'm aware of that. That being said, I still think it's important to talk about it. And that actually ties back into The Artist's Way. I believe it's chapter 3, I'm not sure. But there's one chapter where she focuses in on your mostly childhood experiences having to do with making art. You know, the first time you drew a picture that somebody said it wasn't good. And there's this other fantastic book. I read it so long ago. I'm going to have to find it because I'm also going to have to talk about that in this podcasting thing that I now find myself doing. But they did this kind of study on children and children's artwork. And they found that all children are very good. They're all on par creatively when they make pictures. You know, most kids, I think their first experience with art is painting or coloring or drawing. And they found that there's this turning point with children when adults kind of stop fawning over every little thing that they do. And I myself have even said this before I had read this book. I'm sure a lot of us have, so don't beat yourself up if you're in that boat. When we start asking children what they're drawing a picture of, you know, like, oh, that's beautiful. What is that? That right there causes a major shift and reprograms a lot of children when it comes to their understanding of art, because it's teaching them that their art has to be something. And a lot of us have had childhood experiences, even if from very well-meaning adults, that have shifted our understanding of creativity or art or our own abilities when it comes to writing or reading or really anything. This can apply to math in the same way, I'm certain. And the kids that carry on and continue to be good artists are the ones that had, for some reason, developed that belief about themselves, that they're all right when it comes to painting or writing or whatever it is. I'm actually just now remembering an experience from my childhood. And because we moved when I was quite young, I know that I was younger than five. Oh, as a side note, the moon is out. It's almost perfect blue hour. My goodness, it's gorgeous. It's Vala, the goddess of the moon and good luck. Wow. But this memory that has just struck me, when I was very little, my father was telling me, I was younger than five, a little bit about The Lord of the Flies, which is a book that I love, 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 love. But obviously it's a little mature, so there was a lot that he was leaving out. We were talking about being trapped on an island or something. I don't know why this came up. And he was telling me about these kids that had been shipwrecked with no adults around. And he said there was one sad part where one of the boys who wore glasses, who needed glasses to see, his glasses get broken. And because these kids are on a deserted island with no adults, he can't get them fixed or get new glasses, and so this boy can't see, or can't see very well. Which, of course, later when I got a bit older and read the book, this is Piggy that we're talking about. And for some reason, I asked him, do any of the boys die? And it's funny now, being an adult, thinking back on this memory, because I could see him hesitate before he answered. And he said, yes. And I don't know why I knew this, but I said, is it the kid whose glasses were broken? And he looked at me kind of surprised, like, and said, yeah. And I think that moment very positively shaped my understanding of myself as a writer, because I had impressed an adult with my understanding of story structure. And part of the exercises in The Artist's Way involve going back kind of in your memories and finding these moments that affirmed to you that you have what it takes to do what you're attempting to do right now. And also look at those experiences that did the opposite, that made you feel like your work wasn't up to par. And I think a lot of us, this can happen in school. You know, where we find ourselves comparing ourselves to other children. And, you know, we try to find our own individuality among a group. And if there's another kid who is a fantastic painter, maybe we move a little bit away from painting because, you know, we don't feel like we can compete. And sorry if that brought up uncomfortable things. That really wasn't my intention when I sat down to talk to you guys. But I think a lot of people, when talking about this sort of thing, kind of immediately jump to certain moments in their life and kind of become aware of parts of their identity that are maybe not so helpful when it comes to their writing. You know, some of us have been trying for so long to write something that is part of our identity. We're that person that's always working on a novel. We've been working on the same novel for 7 years now. And it's almost like a joke when people talk about, oh, how's the novel coming? How's the book coming? And I guess because it's getting quite dark and I'm going to have to end this soon, I want to talk about one more point that I think helps alleviate some of these issues. And it's kind of along the lines that we've been speaking. I want to talk about secrecy. And how, for the first 4 books that I wrote, I didn't tell anybody that I was doing it. And how, if nothing else that I've said seems to be something that you think you can tackle or you think you want to tackle, consider this. Consider having a secret project. I think there's this darker aspect of writing, and probably all art more broadly, which is other people's emotions and expectations. You know, it would be nice if this wasn't true, but I think a lot of times you can tell somebody that you're writing a book, and because they themselves have not been able to write a book, their defense mechanisms kick in, and even if they don't say anything, you either get the feeling, or you don't get the feeling, but they have this feeling of them wanting you to fail. Or them wanting you to have written something that's not very good. Because it would make them feel better about themselves. You know, there's that Simpsons episode where Marge writes a book. And Lisa's first thought is, I can't believe Mom wrote a book before me. And she's not happy for her. And I really think that those kind of emotions deeply, deeply affect us. You know, we're pack animals. We can pretend all we want that we don't care what people think, and that we don't care how we make people feel, but we do. And I think a lot of us have other settings that maybe involve putting ourselves down because we don't want to be seen as attempting to be the center of attention or whatever. There's a million reasons why in that kind of situation we could resort to a little bit of self-sabotage. Or, you know, criticize ourselves into the ground and completely slow progress. There's nothing wrong with keeping your project private. There's nothing wrong with permanently keeping your project private. You could have a writer's name, you know, a pen name. Publish it under a name that nobody in your life will know was you. If you want to continue with the secrecy. But I think even giving yourself privacy while you work on the first draft can be incredibly helpful because you don't have other people's energy and other people's thoughts and feelings and expectations influencing you while you work. Nobody but you knows that this baby exists. It's now completely blue. The sun is gone. So I'm gonna head back while there's still a little bit of light so I can see the path. and I'm going to sit down with my partner and look at all of the things that he has saved to share with me. And then I think we're going to watch Tom Segura's new stand-up special, which is on Netflix. I'm very, very excited about that. Peace out, party people. Have a good night. Make sure that you're washing your hands and taking good care of yourselves.